Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me today. As always, I have such great guests and such great inspiring information, so I am just thrilled that you will be joining me for another hour of the kind of conversations that uplift, that transform, that empower us, and allow us to make really informed decisions. If you are listening for the very first time, thank you for joining me. It's great having you here with me on the show. And I always like to remind my audience that there are two ways that you can get the archive shows. I actually have two programs on Progressive Radio Network. So it's What Women Must Know now, happening every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And the other show is called The Love Code, and that's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And that's a wonderful, uplifting, spiritual program. So on that show, I have spiritual teachers and spiritual authors and people who've had, you know, incredibly uplifting spiritual experiences, all designed to remind us about who we really are and the possibilities that exist to make our life exactly the way we want it to be. So if you either go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, and like me there, I post both those shows, or the other option is to go over to my website, which is Dr. Cheryl Selman, drcherylselman.com, and opt into my newsletter there, because then I will be able to send those shows right to your inbox. You won't miss any of them. And in addition, there's great stuff that I like to send, and just educational material and blogs. And so it's a great place to just stay informed and stay empowered, as I like to say, with truthful information. So I hope you'll be joining me either of those places, both of them. You're invited, and I hope you come along, and I hope you'll be visiting every week for both of my programs, because there's just so much to learn and so many ways to grow and so many opportunities to empower ourselves. And that's what really turns me on, and I trust it gets you excited as well. So today we have another one of those wonderful, uplifting conversations. And particularly because this show is called What Women Must Know, it's not always geared just for women. And if you've been listening for a while, you know I have some incredible best-selling authors and health practitioners that really, you know, what they're talking about applies to everyone. But today we're really going to be focusing on women, and we're going to be having a conversation with the authors of a new book called Don't Stop Now, Making the Most of the Rest of Your Life, and particularly geared towards those of us who are the mature, wise elders of our community. So first let me give you a little bit of a background of my guests, the two of the authors for this book. This book was co-authored. And the first was L. Gianforte, and she is an award-winning writer with experience in both the advertising and publishing arenas. Her copywriting career extends from New York to London to California, including work for a diversity of business-to-consumer clients. She is also a collaborative author, ghostwriter, and developmental editor. The other wonderful author of this book, Jan Fischler, began her career writing and producing informational and motivational videos. In addition to developing more than 100 corporate scripts, she produced The Path to Publication DVD series, filmed at the Community of Writers Conference in Squaw Valley. The series contains advice from many prominent authors. So both Elle and Jan have collaborated with this book, Don't Stop Now, Making the Most of the Rest of Your Life. And it's my pleasure to welcome both Elle and Jan to the show today. Hello there, Elle and Jan.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, nice to be on your show. Thank you.
So it's great having both of you with me today. And, you know, so you've done a really great job. It's new to me. I don't know how new the book is. When did it first come out?
It came out in the fall of 2018. So
okay.
Almost
so
a year.
Really, oh, yeah. Okay. So it's 1 year anniversary, right?
And,
so congratulations. I always am really inspired by people who make books happen. You know, having been an author myself, it's always a great accomplishment when you come to the end of this birthing process, this huge creative process,
true.
And then you see it in print. It's very exciting. So congratulations to both of you for taking this vision and making it happen. And
thank you.
Offering great information. So I'm going to start with you, Elle. I always like to ask my guests, tell me a bit about your journey in life and what it was that inspired you to co-create this book.
Well, I was at a point in my life where I wasn't really sure what to do next. I've been a writer for most of my career. I still do advertising copywriting for a small handful of clients, but I just felt like I was at a crossroads. And I would talk to other female friends who were in the same age group, and we realized that once, you know, careers end or slow down, kids are grown, what comes next? And if you sit around and wait to die, you could be waiting 25, 35, 45 years. And Jan and I are very good friends and walking buddies, and we started discussing this on one of our walks. And we realized that we're all sort of in this limbo of not knowing what comes next. And we can't just float here. We need to do something about it. And that's essentially how the book was born.
And what about you, Jan? What's your journey? How has that led you to this book?
Well, I think I have a similar story, but for me, I think I ended up at a crossroads when all the things I was doing to keep busy, including freelance work, but also taking care of a daughter who ended up having Lyme disease, and being married to a man who had served in the Vietnam War, who had a lot of physical problems, and a son who chose to become a professional magician instead of going to college. You know, there were all these sort of factors coming at play.
Wow, that's a lot.
And, you know, I was helping everyone. I just rolled up my sleeves when my parents were sick. I took care of them and flew back and forth from California to Ohio for a year. You know, and then all of a sudden, the coast was clear. My daughter got some treatment and was doing better. My son started getting gigs. My husband started feeling better. And I went, oh, my gosh, now what? And I really had no idea what to do, you know, with the next part. And it was depressing, you know, to think, well, my career's over. I mean, I'm not that old. But, you know, when you get out of the loop at a certain age, it's pretty hard to step back in. So I was, you know, complaining to my friend. We're on our walk. That was pretty much it. And we decided we would go on a little mini retreat for a weekend and see if we had a book.
Wow. And you did.
Yeah, we did.
Well, one of the things that Jan and I realized is that our generation really has no role models. When our mothers were our age, they were, you know, bless their hearts, old women, and they weren't working. And we're living longer, healthier lives than the generations before us. So we're kind of the trendsetters here. We're paving the way for younger women. We need to figure it out.
So what do you think are the memes that exist in our culture for women who are, you know, 50 and 50 is still actually 50 is still really young in my belief system, but
yeah, we're jumping on that one,
right? You know, so as women move past their 50s into their 60s or 70s, what do you think are the memes that exist that are really limiting to the truth about what is possible at this stage of one's life?
Well, you know, I think a lot of women don't really think about it until they get there. You know, there's this desire, when the kids are out of the house, when the kids are settled, when we retire. But there's that gray area in between where do we have enough money to retire? Is this really a reality? Are the kids really gone? I mean, you think they're gone and then they come back because it's a tough world out there right now. So I think people forget how far they've come, and they don't really have a plan for the future, and they kind of spin. And the women I know who end up like that when they read the book, you know, they're more like, oh, my gosh, you give us a lot to think about, because you don't want to be on your deathbed and have any regrets, and you also don't want to be too old to get your affairs in order. And so it's nice, you know, to have like a little idea of what you can do to prepare and what options are really out there.
Yeah, you know, I think this is a really big question, because I see in our culture, I mean, when I look at television, and I don't own one, but when I get a chance to look at a television somewhere, there are all these ads, right? There are all these ads that are going on that are bombarding us just about every commercial break with either all the illnesses that we're going to be afflicted with as we get into our senior years, or all of the diapers we're going to have to start stockpiling to support our failing body, or the class action suits that are coming from the drugs that are prescribed from the eye medication and everything else that we're going to need to help with our, you know, failing eyesight. I mean, it is such a pervasive and persistent programming, I believe. You know, programming us to this state of deterioration, debilitation, lack of function, and ultimately, you know, winding up fully medicated in some assisted living situation. That is a programming.
Which sounds dreadful.
It is dreadful. It's a dreadful future. It's a terrifying future. But we don't realize to what degree we are being programmed to that
accept
future.
Our fate. Well, yeah, because there's a medication for that, whatever it is. You know, rather than eat properly, you can take a pill for your type 2 diabetes or whatever else is ailing you. You know, it used to be back in the day, I remember my grandmother and her sister sitting around and making bone broth, you know, and eating very holistically. Because that's the way they did it back then. You know, we didn't have, when I was a little girl, I mean, she was always had a pot of soup on the stove, and they cooked from scratch. And I think I was probably 12 years old when I first had canned food. So, I mean, it's just the whole consciousness now. It's just so fast-paced, and what can we do that's quick and easy? And we forget that we're putting a lot of garbage in our bodies, and it's making us sick.
So
I think even if you're leading a healthy lifestyle, bodies break down. I mean, you know, our bones and joints are 70 plus, and that's a reality. I think you need to have a sense of humor about it. If you get caught up in all the things that are going wrong, then you stop appreciating all the things that are going right. And, you know, Jen and I will be out on a walk and, you know, we're complaining that, you know, our lower backs hurt and our knees hurt. But the bottom line is we're still walking. You know, it might be easier to just turn around, go home and pour a glass of wine, but, you know, you just push through it. I think it's inevitable. And because it's inevitable, you can't fight it. You can't rage against it. It's going to happen whether you like it or not. So you either become friends with it or you make it your enemy and you just sit in one spot and do nothing.
Well, you know, I have a little different take, I have to say. And that's because I am a naturopathic doctor. I am someone who is incessantly searching for ways to heal, to rejuvenate, to regenerate bodies. I am at a stage in my life that probably similar to where you are. I have no aches and pains. I have no problem with energy. I have no problem with sleep. I have no problem with my mind. I worked at this. And if there is one message that I really want people to hold is that, first of all, you have to clear the memes that says debilitation is part of the aging process. It doesn't have to be debilitation if we know what we need to do to really support our bodies, our mind, our emotions, our spirit, and holding the highest thoughts to regenerate, because I've seen miracles and people who are dealing with all sorts of chronic illnesses and being able to totally heal at any age, at any stage. So I hold those thoughts. So, you know, I appreciate what you guys are saying, but maybe as a naturopath, I see more possibilities than people who buy the stories on television and the programmings from television and from newspapers and from magazines and from friends and from doctors that are telling us it's a downhill slide. And I don't buy that for myself. And I don't see that.
Okay.
I'm not living that way.
I don't think we live that way either. I think mindset, a big portion of our book is about mindset and believing that things are possible and taking charge of. I also think it's important for people to assess where they are, and I think it's fantastic when someone has focused on their health for their entire life and they will feel well and they're able to carry on like they were much younger. I think that's the ideal, but so many people aren't there. And, you know, if they're going to a naturopath, then they already have the right mindset. But that's not where a lot of people go. So I think our purpose was more to look at different aspects of your life, different areas of your life, see where you are, what is your physical well-being, what is your emotional health, how are your relationships, what about your finances. Look at those situations and take inventory and say, you know what, we even have an assessment tool at the beginning of each chapter. So you can take an assessment and say, okay, I'm faring pretty well in this area, but there's other areas that really could use some attention. And that's mostly what we wanted the book to be able to do, is sort of bring to the forefront the areas that do need some attention and give you some suggestions about what you can do to get on a better track.
So what do you think are some of the areas that you believe people need to have their, you know, more attention on? Let's talk about some of them that you have in your book. What do you think is like one of the main areas that women need to be aware of, or categories that they should explore and have more understanding or knowledge of?
Well, in the book, we've devoted a chapter to each of the issues that we think are important. Physical health, emotional well-being, finances, appearance, relationships, changing bad behaviors, learning something new, giving back. And we interviewed women in all of these arenas to find out what their mechanisms are for dealing with that particular issue. There's also an interview with an expert on each of these subjects in each chapter. For example, in the chapter on appearance, we interviewed a dermatologist who actually provided masses of information on skincare that, you know, most women would probably have to pay, you know, $100 consultation fee to find out. So there's the price of the book covered right there.
Okay, so that's that's a good topic. Let's go there. So what did you learn?
I'll tell you what I learned. I've always been somebody who has been, I am who I am. You know, I'm not a fan of facelifts and excessive cosmetic surgery or anything like that. But after meeting with Dr. Muhlenhoff, who was our expert, I can understand now more of a 360 point of view. And I think for some women, this is really important to them, you know, that they have trouble really seeing their beauty inside, so they feel better when they look in the mirror. And if that's what it takes at a certain age, then who am I to judge that? So for me, plus there are so many things that you can buy just at your local drugstore or CVS or wherever you go, Walgreens. It's amazing all the products that really don't cost a fortune. And that was the other myth he dispelled, because I thought, oh, my God, if I start going, I'll have to pay a fortune to get skincare products. And that's not the case at all.
And he addresses everything from tending to your skin to non-invasive procedures to, you know, overall body care. So whether you're at the lower end of the spectrum in terms of not wanting to do a lot but wanting to keep your skin healthy, or at the higher end of the spectrum where you're willing to pay a lot of money to have some things done, that's all covered. And that's, you know, another thing about the book is we tried really, really hard not to focus this on one particular mindset. We're really trying to cover the entire spectrum. And that's really evident in the chapter on appearance, because there's a little vignette about a woman who really doesn't want to do a whole lot, and she's happy to, you know, live her life in yoga pants and a t-shirt, and that's what makes her happy. And then we talk about another woman who will, you know, put on full makeup to go to the gym, and there's no right or wrong. We're trying to encourage women to be true to their own personal style.
Which is what we want. We want to have a wide spectrum of options. So, talking about the skin, you know, I know when I looked at your book that the doctor who works with, I'm not sure if he's a plastic surgeon or whatever, just a dermatologist, but
he's a dermatologist.
About, yeah, the various options. So what's one skincare product you can buy over the counter in a drugstore that he recommends?
One of the things he talked to us about, it's actually more of a makeup product, and it was something that neither Jan nor I was familiar with, and that's a BB cream, which is BB is for, I think it's for beauty balm, and it moisturizes and it also provides some foundation coverage. And that was, I'd never worn foundation until that was mentioned by him, and that was mentioned by one of the makeup artists that we interviewed. And, you know, it's a simple product. You can buy, you know, Chanel in a department store, or you can buy an off-brand in a drugstore. They pretty much do the same thing. And that's, you know, now when I get dressed up, that's something I like to do. I feel it gives me a little bit of polish.
Well, that's a good piece of advice. I mean, BB cream is kind of a foundation that blends in with your skin tones, right?
It does. Yeah, there's BB cream and there's CC cream, and both of those were completely alien terms to us. And I'm usually up on this sort of thing, so I was actually very pleasantly surprised. And now I swear by both. CC is a color-correcting cream, and they're layerable, so you can... You know, you could put on a load of it if that's what you choose, or you can just put on a thin film and just have a brighter face than bare skin would be.
Right.
The other thing he talked about too was the importance of having an annual exam, just to look at moles and other growths that occur along with the aging process, and it's just really important to not say, gee, I wonder if this is skin cancer or a melanoma, but actually go get it checked out, and how important that is to take care of that. And right after I heard that, I went and made an appointment.
And I think that's a really good point, because a lot of skin cancers can show up in areas that we can't really see. And they're
especially
often
if you're
skin go ahead.
I was going to say, especially if you are prone to moles. You know, some people just have moles all over their body, and some people don't. And if you do, and they're on your back, and you can't really see them, who knows what's going on?
Yeah, because the interesting thing about skin cancers, they're often found on parts of our body that have no exposure to the sun. So that's why it can be difficult to see them. They're not obvious, like they might be on our back or just in convenient places.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really good strategy.
And you know, one of the worst things that we can do when we see a spot that wasn't there before is to check with Dr. Internet. I discovered a spot on my shoulder last week, and I immediately got online and I Googled skin cancer, and I was absolutely convinced that the spot was skin cancer, and I called my dermatologist, got in the same day, and he took one look at me and said, it's nothing, and I was in and out of his office in probably 3 minutes, but it was a small...
With great relief, right?
With great relief, yeah. I mean, I went through every worst-case scenario because I'm really, really good at that, and I was happy to find out that it was nothing.
Yeah, yeah, that's such a good point.
And I think some people, I think, you don't want to make a big deal about it. It's kind of embarrassing, like, oh, I have this spot, but it's so much better to just go and know and be done with
it. Right. Absolutely. Let's switch gears and talk about managing money. One of the things that I am really bad in, and I know it, and I keep saying I'm going to fix it up, is like doing my health directives and even doing a will. It's like, I haven't gotten to that yet. And I know that it's really important to be doing, and you're probably going to tell me it's really important to be doing.
It's really important.
let's talk about that.
Creating a will, having an advanced health care directive, a power of attorney, they're not fun things to do. But once they're done, and you don't have to worry about them. And I think that's what's really important. I do have a very, very well-developed worrier gene. And having this stuff in place really simplifies my life. I didn't like doing it at all, but it's just so incredibly important because the flip side can be so much worse.
Let's go back to the kind of the basics for people who are women, everyone who's listening, but may not know all of these things and how to get them done, so we can, in a sense, guide people to take action to do these things. So let's define
them. Okay, well, I'll tell you what I did.
How to do it. Yeah.
This is what I did. I found an attorney in my town that I really liked who takes care of elder issues and who does wills and trusts. And I got all the paperwork to help me think through it. And then I said to my husband, we have an appointment on this date to go talk to this attorney because we have to get this in order before we travel abroad. We were going to take a trip away, and I thought if something were to happen, it would be a total mess to leave behind for our kids. So we went to an attorney, and we paid, I think it was a couple $1,000s, and worth every nickel, because you have the peace of mind. You know that the paperwork is being drawn up properly. It's now in a nice binder. It sits in my closet on a shelf, and there's another copy that went to the executor who happens to be a cousin. And I think that way I took my trip and I thought if something horrible happens to both of us, our kids are going to be fine. You know, there's an adult who can be the executor who is at a point in their life where they can be a good advisor. And my kids are still pretty young. I mean, they're 29 and 31, which, you know, they're not. I think if they lost their parents, it would be really hard for them to engage with all the financial stuff that they would have to deal with. So that's my suggestion. It worked for me. It was so overwhelming that to try to figure it all out on my own, I was pretty sure I would miss something important, and I just didn't want to take that chance.
And my solution was very similar. My husband and I went to an attorney who specializes in estate planning. And he did everything. He did the wills, he did the advanced health care directives, and he did the power of attorney.
So for women who are on their own, or for women who don't have a lot of resources to spend a couple of $1,000s to do that, I know there are online services that you can create a will with, or for a nominal amount. Have you looked into those?
I actually, before I remarried, I just went online and went to LegalZoom.com and put together a will. I think it cost me $50.
I just want to say that what's really important is that you print the will out and you have it notarized, because it doesn't hold up in a court of law if you have a will on LegalZoom that you haven't signed and you haven't had notarized.
Right. They must tell you
just
that.
Just dealt with that.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
Yeah.
They
must give you those instructions to make it
fully. Well, you'd think, but with my brother-in-law, and he had a will, but it wasn't printed out and signed, and it didn't hold up in court. So there were some friends of his that were very disappointed, who thought they were going to be getting a windfall and didn't.
Wow.
So you have to print it out, and you have to get it signed.
that would kind of seem logical, like print it out, store it somewhere with, your important papers.
Yeah, but, you know.
Anyway. It's not necessarily so, you know. Well, let's talk about health directives. Can you just define what a health directive is, and then how to, you know, what you have learned and what you recommend or what your experience has been?
Basically, a healthcare directive lets a hospital or medical professional know what your wishes are under a variety of circumstances. If you want, heroic, I'm not a medical professional. I really hesitate to answer this question. I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants, but it kind of lets them know who can make decisions for you if you can't make decisions for yourself, what kind of medical intervention you would want under different circumstances.
Whether you want to be resuscitated or not.
Yeah, I was going to say, do not resuscitate, which is a really important piece, because a lot of people do not want, if they're in a critical situation or have had some subcondition accident that left them incapacitated, unless you have a do not resuscitate, you can be on life support for a long time but not be conscious.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right.
So that decision, whether you want to do that, just we're looking at future possibilities, but the do not resuscitate is what a lot of people have to designate in order for the hospital cannot pull the plug on you. So they will keep you alive at all costs.
Right, and that's exactly it. And quality of life doesn't really enter into it. It's just, keep the patient alive at all costs. And I think the Advanced Healthcare Directive gets into the area of quality of life. You get to make those choices.
You know, one thing that happens to a lot of us in this age group is we're making these decisions for our parents. You know, so many people I know have parents in their 90s, and they're trying to figure out what mom and dad really want, because that generation didn't want to talk about it. And they were just supposed to read their mind or do what's in their best interest, you know. And that puts a huge burden on, adult children and people our age, who are thinking about it themselves, but also trying to make that decision for mom or dad.
And so it's good to
be educated.
Yeah, so it's so important. I have a question which you may or may not have the answer to. So if let's say the parent did not stipulate in their health directive that they did not want to be resuscitated, which is DNR. Do not resuscitate, DNR. Can a family member do that? Can a family member request that? I don't think so. I think it has to be the patient themselves, right?
I think it has to be in the paperwork. I'm trying to remember, because my mom was beyond being saved, and I don't remember. She must have had the paperwork. She must have.
Yeah.
They had all their affairs in order. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the hospitals now are pretty good about it. You know, when you go in for anything, they make sure that you have something on file.
Yeah.
Which is,
yeah,
that's
you
good.
Need to.
That's good.
You but, know, I
you
mean,
know,
these
you have
are
to
topics.
Think about.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you have to think about who you give power of attorney to. For a lot of women, you were talking about women that are on their own, most of them have a really good girlfriend, and they've talked about this, I hope, you know, and this is just, for me, it's like opening up the conversation, like talking about the things rather than just keeping them to ourselves. It's like anyone who knows me would know, okay, if I have no quality of life and no chance of it, that please do everyone a favor and pull the plug. I mean, that's easy for me to talk about. But for some people, for religious reasons or whatever else, they just can't have this conversation. And
yeah.
I hope our book encourages people to talk about things that are a little bit difficult.
And that's certainly one of those areas, because I can tell you, and, you know, kind of, you know, revealing deep, dark secrets here, that I've avoided it myself. I really have. I have a little file that says health directive and will that's, you know, kind of waiting for something. It's nothing's in there at the moment.
Yeah. Okay,
and
you need to get that filled.
All right, you got to stay on my case about that, okay? You promise?
Okay. We're going to send you an email a week and remind you.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
On the topic of advanced healthcare directive, if you have to go into the hospital for any sort of procedure, that's like the first question you're asked. They will insist upon having an advanced healthcare directive on file.
Wow.
So obviously, you know, it would be really nice to get it done before then, but I don't even know if you can be admitted to the hospital if you don't. Jan's making faces at me.
I'm laughing.
I don't know what's going on here.
No, I'm laughing because, you know, the antidote is just stay well and you never have to worry about this.
Yes, don't die. You'll be good.
Yeah,
yeah.
Stay well. No,
yeah,
you
definitely
can.
Definitely don't die before your will.
No.
Don't do that.
Yeah, just stay well, defy all odds, you know, never end up in the hospital and you're all good, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But the truth is that these are issues that there's great avoidance to taking care of, and I'm an example of that. And you've just reminded me that it really needs to be done. It doesn't need to be that difficult. And I know that there are many sites that you can download documents to do your advanced health directive. You can even do a basic will, but you've got to print it out and sign it, as you said. But it doesn't have to be an expensive project, which I think
No, absolutely
can
put some
not.
And
off,
if,
right?
I think the financial line is if your assets are more than $150,000, it's recommended that you have a trust. Otherwise, a simple will is fine, and if you don't have that much, it really can be a very simple document, but you need that document. And the last thing you want is people fighting over your stuff. I mean, I've seen some of the ugliest family issues. The worst of the worst comes out in people when someone has passed away and it's not clear who gets what or who deals with what. It's the best gift you can leave to your heirs or your family and friends. It's like, spell it out. And if you still need more detail, I was just talking to a friend the other day, and I said, I feel like I should write a letter to my kids, you know, each one individually, just letting them know what my real thoughts are about my stuff and what of it has some value and worth and maybe should be passed down, and how little I care about most of it. You know, even though I've said it so many times, I really don't care. I think when it's in writing and people are under duress and they're sad and they're full of grief, it's so much easier for them to just say, well, Mom said right here.
Yeah. Yeah. And follow those instructions.
Just do it. Make it easy. You know, type it out.
And, you know, another thing, it could really be a very simple process. I mean, you can write a will and just state that upon your death, everything gets liquidated and goes to charity or goes to family. I mean, it doesn't have to be a complex thing at all.
Right, right. Like,
I mean,
you don't have to figure out where everything is going, every little object you have.
The wills that my husband and I did are very simple. It's me to him, him to me, and then certain things that I consider valuable that have been passed down through my family will go to my nieces and great nieces. And other than those few stipulations, everything gets liquidated. And we've designated charities, it doesn't have to be complicated at all.
Yeah. Great information. So all of you listening out there, if you haven't taken this step and taken the challenge to put this together, I encourage you to get your will done, get an advanced health directive, make it happen, get into action with it, and at least start. You know, make a simple one. You might want to change it somewhere down the track, but at least cover yourself. I'm going to do it.
You can do it right along with your audience.
Oh, I am going to do it right along with everybody. So everyone out there, send me a copy. Send me a copy of your will so I know.
Okay.
All right. Make sure I'm in it as well. Okay.
Yeah,
so,
there you go.
All right.
We'll leave you all of the leftover copies of our book. How about that?
There you go.
Wow. That's just such an honor. All right. So let's talk about let's talk about when we enter that retirement cycle of our life, and let's talk about on the things you wrote about in the chapter, you know, about what we can do, how we continue to create a new career, that it's not the end, but we have a new chapter, or we can get on and do more education, or there's some people I know that are involved with programs like Rhodes Scholars. I think that's R-O-A-D mm-hmm. Scholars. And, you know, share with us some of the options that are available when we retire, which I hate that word because I don't really ever intend to retire, but those that actually, you know, officially retire from a job, and then what? What are the options? Because there are so many things you could be doing with this stage of life.
I think for a lot of people who have had a job that maybe they didn't love, now is the time to follow their passion and to really get back to those things that make you tick. And I'll give you an example. I have a friend who is a quilter. I'm not crafty at all. But when she retired, she was a therapist for many years, and when she retired, she said, I just want to quilt. And she's entered a lot of her quilts and fairs, and she's winning prizes for them, and she's like a kid in a candy shop. You know, she's so excited, like, look, I got another prize. So I think it's so important when you do end a career or before you actually retire to start thinking about what are the things you wish you could do? What are the things you were good at as a kid? Like, did you love to play the piano? Did you love to go dancing? I mean, maybe it's not a ballet class. Maybe you're going to take a swing dance class, or maybe you're going to, you know, take Zumba. But I think we can all go back to that essential part of ourselves and say, okay, let's dream a little bit. You know, if time is not an object and I don't have to make a whole lot of money anymore, what can I do? I think it's an internal question that people need to ask themselves.
Well, there are immense opportunities, aren't there, when you are retired or at that a retirement stage of life, or just at that, I like, you know, kind of the third act of one's life. There's just so many opportunities for seniors.
Well, and there are online classes. There are volunteer opportunities. You know, there are podcasts and papers and books where you can get more information. And, you know, I agree with Jan in that, you know, to tap into something that you really, really like to do. I mean, it's what we tell our kids, you know, when they're trying to figure out what they want their careers to be. And, you know, the clear message is do something that you love, because if you're at it nine to five every day and you hate it, you're going to be a wretched individual. And I think that same philosophy applies when you're looking at retirement years. You know, do what you love. I love cooking. And one of my favorite things to do is entertain. I love putting together dinner parties, cocktail parties. I love making hors d'oeuvres more than anything. So, and that's part of what I do. I'm with you in that I don't see myself ever seriously using the retirement word. I'll be 72 next month, and I don't think I'll ever retire. I love to write. I'm, you know, as I said, I enjoy cooking, and, you know, these are things that I do to fill my time. I talk about shopping, but Jan would get mad at me. But that's another passion.
You know, the key is to stay engaged in life.
Exactly.
You know, I was thinking, your question's a good one, and it's different. Everyone's so different. I mean, for example, I love to walk. So I have 2 4-year-old golden retrievers, and I get my 10,000 steps in plus every day, because if I don't, they're hard to manage because they're really active. But anything that is for fitness, you know, people love to kayak, they love to ski, they love to be outside, anything like that. You have time now when you're retired. You can be outdoors. You can be more social. Now's the time to pick up the phone and call that friend and say, let's go to lunch. Let's have coffee. Like Al said, invite friends over for dinner. You know, you can also volunteer. Every organization usually needs some kind of volunteer, whether it's stuffing envelopes or being at an event and helping out. Where we live in Nevada County, there's endless events going on, and you can always get free tickets in exchange for your time helping out. You know, a lot of people don't have time for spiritual pursuits when they are working all the time or raising a family. So if you've always wanted to begin a meditation practice, this is a really great time to be able to do that. And then you could just have fun. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong. You don't always have to be doing something that is so meaningful. If what you'd really like to do is take up golf, you know, or just go bowling or do the things that are fun for you, you know, sit down and read a trash novel. I mean, it doesn't really matter as long as you are using the time so that you feel good about it, you personally, not that you're being judged by anybody else.
And the other thing that is really important to remember is that the brain is always making new connections. As long as you're learning, as long as you're experiencing new things, as long as you are open to try something different, your brain is actually making new connections, which means you are getting smarter. So that's why that stage of life holds such opportunities, because it gives people the chance to explore and experience new things and, you know, read new books, meet new people, go to different lectures, which is a learning process that actually is stimulating our brain so we can keep getting smarter as we get older.
Right, developing new neural pathways. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And language learning is good too. You know, now's the time to, if you always wanted to go to Paris, start learning some French before you take your trip.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I have been doing a program online from a site called Duolingo. I've been spending more and more time in Central America, and I was terrible in Spanish when I was in high school and university. It actually was the most traumatic class I ever had, because I got a C in it. It's like ours. And So I'm doing Duolingo now, and I just do 20 minutes a day, and just practicing, kind of reviving those memory banks. And I was recently down in Costa Rica, and it was so much fun just being able to say little phrases. And learning a language really does help create more neural pathways in the brain. So there's so many of these online programs to learn another language. And you know what? It's really fun. That a site like Duolingo actually makes it fun to learn rather than traumatic.
Yeah, I went to Italy in May, and I was cramming on the plane trying to learn some basic Italian phrases, and I did okay.
I went to Italy several years ago with a girlfriend who has family there, and we are both Italian, but she grew up in the culture, whereas my parents wanted my brother and me to be American, so they didn't teach us the language. So on my first trip with her, I let her do all the talking. 2 years after that, I had studied a little bit of Italian. She and I went back together, and this time I made an attempt to communicate, and my experience was 100% better because I was just more involved. And it was great.
Yeah, and people so appreciate your attempt to speak their language.
Oh, just trying. And I remember sitting on the floor cross-legged with her little cousin who was 3 years old. The little girl didn't speak any English, and my Italian was minimal. And we pointed at body parts and told each other what the word was in our language. And it was lovely. It was absolutely lovely to be taught by a child.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Great story. So, okay, so in the time we have left, I'm going to start with you, Elle. What do you think is one of the important messages you want to share with my audience today?
I think the most important message is actually the title, the subtitle of the book, Making the Most of the Rest of Your Life. As long as we have breath in our bodies, there are things that we can do to make our lives meaningful. And the key is not to stop. As I said earlier, you can't just stop and wait for death, because you could be waiting a very, very, very long time. Do something every day that makes you happy or makes you feel productive.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. And Jan, what do you want to share with my audience today?
Well, I agree with Elle. I think that's really important. And I also think it's attitude. I think keeping a positive attitude and being open and willing to look in the mirror at who you are and try to be better, a better person, a more productive member of society for as long as you can be, a better friend, you know, a better partner. I just think we have so many opportunities as we get older to fix whatever we need to fix and, you know, enjoy life as fully as we possibly can.
And one last question I want to ask both of you. So you had an idea. You were looking at your life and what was important and meaningful and how you could give greater meaning and service in your life. And you came up with this idea, and it was, you know, germinated into an actual book, which has opened doors. So that's what I want to ask each of you. So what have you personally learned from this process of making the most of the rest of your life for yourself? And, what was the gift that you gave yourself from this process? Where has it led you?
Okay, I want to answer that first. This is Jan. One of my lifelong passions was speaking. There's something about me. My son got it. You know, he loves to perform. But I always wanted to be a public speaker. And when I had the opportunity when I was in my late 20s, it turned out I was pregnant. And so I really couldn't go on tour like I wanted to. And so now, after I have the book, it's like I can do that. You know, I can go talk to women's groups, and I can share what I've learned and tell my story, and it's just really fun. So for me, it just took me back to what I'd always wanted to do, and I'm having a great time doing it, and I'm meeting some fantastic people, and, you know, I'm on shows like this, which is fabulous.
So I have a question for you, Jan. Have you learned any good magic tricks that you do on stage?
I do not do magic on stage. That would be my son. I don't want to compete with him. No.
Okay. Okay. I thought you might do a few little tricks to entertain your audience. I think I would. I think that would be fun.
I might. I could. You know, when he was 7 years old, I knew all his tricks, but now he's kind of superseded anything that I knew at the time.
Oh, okay. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, Elle, what about you?
I think what I've really gleaned from this process is how women can be our greatest source of help. We interviewed scores of women throughout the process of doing the book, and just, you know, hearing women's stories and, you know, finding out how ways that they rose to various challenges and came out the other side. And it made me realize what an incredible force women are when they come together, and how we really help and support one another. And I've always known that. I've always, I've been blessed to have a lot of friends in my life, but that really was hammered home during the process of this book. And both Jen and I developed some very, very strong friendships with women who we met through the process of working on the book, and that's been incredibly rewarding.
Isn't it wonderful how all these new doors open up when you just decide to take on a project? You never quite know where it's going to lead, but it's going to lead you to some interesting places, guaranteed.
It's true. Jan was doing some research and discovered a woman online who is a hypnotherapist. And Jan said, you call her, see if she wants to be part of the book. And I made contact with her, and as it turned out, she was going to be in L.A. around the same time that I was going to be in L.A., and we agreed to meet. And we spent the most incredible afternoon together. And we're friends. Every now and then, she'll just call me or I'll call her out of the blue just to touch base. So it's just really special.
You just don't know what's waiting for you when you're willing to step out. And whether it's learn something new or create a project or, travel, you just don't know what's waiting for you. And whatever that is in the unknown is always going to be a gift for you.
So exactly.
Like, go step out into the unknown. Go explore something new.
I think, too, the older you get, the more risks you can take, for that. And there's something when you're younger, you think, you overthink it. Oh, should I approach that person? Should I speak first? But at this age, if I meet somebody and they look interesting or they're wearing something I'm curious about or something about them piques my interest, I'll just go up and engage and start a conversation. And I feel that that's part of the luxury of being older. That we can just do that.
Yes, absolutely. So I invite everyone to go to Ellen Jan's website, which is don'tstopnow.us. So that's .us. Don'tstopnow.us. And pick up a copy of this wonderful book, a lot of self-assessment so you can, kind of check yourself out and learn more and be inspired and know that there are infinite possibilities and opportunities at every stage of life. No matter where we're at, no matter what's going on, there are immense options and pathways open to us. So, Jan Forte, Jan Fischler, thank you so much for your time today, your wisdom, your fortitude in making something amazing happen in your lives, and just thanks for sharing with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's been great.
You're so welcome. And to all my listeners, thank you for joining me today. Pick up a copy, Don't Stop Now, Making the Most of the Rest of Your Life. And remember, I'm here every Thursday and opt in to my Facebook page, What Women Must Know. Go to my website, Dr. Cheryl Selman, opt in there, get the shows, and always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.